When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Yeah, you can laugh. I was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
Trophies, Ken. Trophies.
Trophies.
They are the currency which is used in this beautiful, beautiful game. The only currency that matters. And it was a weekend that went a fair way to deciding where said trophies are going to end up. At the end of this season. For the first time in the history of the FA Cup, it's going to be a Manchester derby in the Wembley showpiece. Showpiece, Ken. City and United won their respective semi-finals. It will be the second leg of the treble that City will be in a position to win if they win the league, as now looks increasingly likely, after the, and I'm going to say, elite-tier bottle job that Arsenal served up for us on Friday night. Going 2-0 and then 3-1 down before coming back to salvage a draw against bottom side in the league, Southampton. At home. And then there was Newcastle 5, Spurs 0 after 22 minutes yesterday. No trophy, but in some ways, Ken, Champions League football is a kind of trophy, as Arsene Wenger once memorably said. I'm just glad it's Owen that's taken the day off and not second captain's director of football, Ken Early. Hello there, Ken. Football, bloody hell.
Yeah, that Newcastle Spurs, you know. Wow.
I mean, there was a lot going on this weekend, Ken. There really was.
Yeah, there really was. The Newcastle Spurs, I think we should talk about that in more detail today because it was really...
They were pathetic.
Well, they really...
They really were.
So, yeah, we can...
There's a full set of Premier League fixtures this week, including Man City against Arsenal on Wednesday night, which will either reignite or, let's face it, decisively end this title race. You'll be able to hear about that with us only if you're a World Service member. So why don't you have a think about joining us? It's a fiver a month plus VAT, depending on where you are in the world. For now, though, Ken, why don't you report on some sport there?
Well, I suppose we should start with Tottenham. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the most high-profile game of the weekend. You know, there were some
FA Cup
semi-finals.
Yep. One complete non-event, the other nil-all. But
a very good game, though.
Yeah, it was a good game.
I really enjoyed the game. Brighton were, I would say, unlucky. But...
Yeah.
It is amazing, though, how many players are just missing the goal completely. Like, since Harry Kane did that. You know, it's just... And then we've seen Tchouaméni did it in the final of the World Cup. Salah did it recently. Saka... Haaland.
Yeah.
And Solly March.
Yeah. I have to say, Webster and Dunk, one after another, as the Brighton penalty takers. I mean, I'm not going to tell David De Gea how to do his job, right? I would never in a million years dream of doing that. But let's just presume the two massive lumps that play a centre half for Brighton are going to put it, they're not going to kick across their body. They're going to take the easy option and they're going to, if they're right footed, they're going to side foot it.
You think that's the easy option?
That's the easy option.
I think a lot of people would disagree with that, would say the natural side to go is to go across the body.
I think when you're taking a penalty, safety first. And that's basically what we're talking about there. Those lads weren't going to miss the target. It's in ways more understandable for Haaland or Kane or someone
Solly March
to blast it over because it's like, you know, I'm good enough to really go for the hardest, the highest possible tariff here to ensure that the keeper, even if he dives the correct way, isn't going to save it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see the metric there. With the two big lumps, though, I was walking up going, De Gea, just dive to your left.
But why are you saying but these two big lumps? Have you seen these lumps?
I know, they're brilliant.
Have you seen them? Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous what they're doing. You know, the whole game, what they're practically like everything short of actually just juggling the ball to try and make Martial come and, you know, come on, Martial. You know nothing's going to happen until you come over to me. That's the way it is. And, you know, there was another moment when I think it was Dunk, he fell over, something happened to him, and he got up and he decided to stretch himself out by touching the ground. I don't know if you saw this. I mean, he's a big man. He could have put his elbows on the ground. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, he just doubled. He just jackknifed. Well, this guy's really flexible. Man, I shouldn't probably be impressed by this.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you compare too many things to yourself.
This is literally the most impressive part of the
Look how elastic this guy is. You know, he's so big, but he's in admirable condition.
Mm.
And Brighton generally just were really good. I think they really could have done with Big F. There was a couple of moments.
Yeah.
You know, there was a cross which Welbeck didn't sort of go, was it a kind of a rebound into the area, and Welbeck is just not there. He's never really been that type of a striker. You know, one who reacts quickly to little opportunities right in front of the goal.
Yeah.
He's more of a guy who ranges all across the opposition half, doing damage. You know, just that concentrated goal scoring area.
Yeah.
And then there was the moment when it was Caicedo with a quick little pass into Undav, and this is it.
Yeah.
Here's the goal. And touch.
As quickly as the chance presented itself, the chance was gone.
The touch was just so bad, and whoever, which I can't remember which of the United defenders got across to intercept. United were just under so much pressure for so much of the game, and then it's just that question of there's no one who can, you know. Even Mitoma had heavy touches. There was a couple of heavy touches.
Well, the
touches
one in extra time.
Was this the one where he swept the leg of De Gea?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't the first time as well, you know. He didn't have his best.
Now, Wan-Bissaka was very good up against him, to be fair.
Yeah, although I thought he gave it to him a bit. You know, I saw that James Maddison is saying Wan-Bissaka is the best one-on-one defender in the world. People run out of ideas against him. But I don't think it was ever Mitoma's idea to just, you know, wooden foot the ball to him. You know, it's just not really his usual methodology. So
I feel bad about calling the two Brighton lads big lumps. But you know what
they're
not.
I mean, they are big. They're big, but they're good.
In a penalty shootout situation, that's all I'm saying. I feel bad, though, now. Because Brighton were, I would say they were the better team, but they were slightly the better team.
Yeah, well, I mean, Man United have four times Brighton's budget. You know, like this game should not be a contest. Or if it is a contest where one team clings on and gets the penalties and wins on penalties, it shouldn't be the giant team. You know, United should be winning this. United were obviously, the defense had a very patched together look, you know. But when you're down to, when Maguire is unavailable, suspended, tactical suspension, when he's unavailable, that's not necessarily weakening the lineup. You know, with him, the way that he is at the moment, and something is happening to him in every game, some awful thing is happening, and it feels like he's trapped in a nightmare.
Yeah. I always feel, you know,
it's actually just as well to have Luke Shaw.
Yeah. I always feel, you know, when an opposing player goes over to commiserate with the player who's just missed a penalty in the penalty shootout, I'm always like, lads, they don't want to see you, you know. But then I saw Harry Maguire going over to Solly March, giving him a pat on the head. Yeah. I can't imagine Solly March going, well,
big man,
I'd still rather be in my boots. To be honest, over the course of the entire year, who's having a better time? But let's be honest.
Yeah.
Get chin up, mate, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, Brighton totally dominated the possession. You see the way that De Gea was just kicking everything long. You know, it was like, no more of that nonsense.
The Brighton fans have also, I think, gotten on, to be fair.
Yeah, we've seen enough from you. And it is actually interesting when you look at their situation under De Zerbi. I mean, I don't know how much longer De Zerbi's going to be there, but just looking at his impact on the team, it is actually crazy. And you could say, okay, he actually came into a good club. You know, the team that had been left behind by Potter was in good shape. You know, the defense was kind of sorted out to an extent. And they'd signed some really good players, you know, guys like Mitoma and Ferguson coming through. You know, things were, it was a good job to take. You know, his Google session that Graham Souness mocked him for. I mean, looking up Brighton on the internet and checking out to see if they're, if they were good.
Some employers would actually appreciate that level of effort.
Well, you know, that's I think that's what Souness, that's what Souness was kind of poo-pooing at the time. I mean, this is, if you remember when De Zerbi actually took over at the end.
Who's Brighton? Who's Roberto De Zerbi?
It was like, this guy doesn't know our game.
Yeah.
And sure, and they, oh, they've been impressed with his knowledge of the club. He could have got that off the Google. This is what Souness said. You know, he's got a job interview. He spends a couple of hours on Google. That's not the work of a genius. So, so, but I think
not what, doing the work though is also not the work.
Yeah, but I think Souness is just articulating there kind of a contempt for the sort of clerical administrative world. Mm. You know, the whole the whole world of the sort of office drone who looks things up on a computer to try and find information about a job interview. Whereas that, we know that that's not really what football is all about. I mean, look at Julian Nagelsmann. That's a guy who knows what football is all about. I mean, he's obviously not really a football man, but he has withdrawn from the Chelsea managerial search because it turns out they seem to expect him to want to go through a series of interviews as though he was applying to work in the civil service. Mm. You know, he's got to do interviews. He's got to fill out forms.
Disgraceful.
He's expected to compete for the job with a bunch of other people.
My record is there for all to see.
Exactly. So if you want me, give me the job. And if you don't want me, stop wasting my time.
Yeah.
That seems to have been the attitude that Nagelsmann took to Chelsea. Although Chelsea seemed to be putting out as well, sort of, well, we didn't really fancy him anyway, you know. We looked into him and we weren't sure. After he'd said, I'm not taking the job. So, but I mean, that's, whereas, you know, this sort of idea of, oh, well, let's check out what the club is like. And then coming back, oh, I quite like the look of this club. Anyway, the point is, Brighton were in a pretty good place under Graham Potter. They are now a totally different team. You know, if you look at what, I mean, it's not just the results. Like, they've lost twice this year. One of them was Fulham. They lost to an 88-minute 1-0 against Fulham, and nobody could explain what had happened. It was just one of those. Well, this is, we've all seen games where the wrong team wins, and this was one of those games.
We're Ireland fans. Yeah. We've seen plenty of them. I'm talking about Luxembourg, not about, you know, wins that we
might have. Oh, I thought you were talking about us.
Yeah.
But
I was, really.
And the other one was the Tottenham game. You know, Tottenham beat them 2-1 in what we have you know, identified as the best ever Spurs result, but also the referees had to apologize to Brighton afterwards for completely sabotaging the game, destroying them. They denied them like 5 goals, right? So they disallowed 3 goals, which they could have allowed, and they ruled out 2 penalties, which were obviously penalties. Yeah. So expected goals 4.6, right? And and I think Brighton still won the expected goals by a considerable margin, despite the disallowals. So okay, so you're in a pretty good place. But also, I mean, it's even when you compare them to themselves, Potter, the Potter Brighton, like Pep was talking about Potter and De Zerbi. Pep is like big on De Zerbi at the moment. You know, he sort of goes through phases of having proteges. Like he had Tuchel. Was kind of, oh, this guy, you know, you're going to love this guy. You don't hear that anymore. He doesn't talk about Tuchel anymore. Tuchel loses again, by the way, on the weekend. They lost 3-1 to Mainz, Bayern, and now Dortmund are top of the league after losing 4-0. We can get to them maybe at the end. But obviously Arteta is a protege of Pep's, although it's a bit awkward now that he's managing. You know, I
feel like it's not going to be that awkward.
I feel like if City win, you know, big on Wednesday, we're going to hear a lot of praise of Mikel Arteta from Pep Guardiola, right? But De Zerbi went to visit him apparently at the start of the season and hung out with him a little bit, you know, learning, whatever. And so he's been very complimentary of him. But compared it to Potter and said, yeah, the defensive phase is basically similar, but what they're doing with the ball is totally different. With Potter, the build-up was all long balls, and De Zerbi doesn't do that. I thought, is that really true? It is a little bit. Like they were trying 77 long balls per game with Potter, Average 53% finding their target. Mm-hmm. And that's down to like 65 and with 60% averaging. So it suggests that they're kind of playing higher probability long balls when they do. And it's a little bit down. But what is the huge difference that you can't sort of not notice is the just the massive increase in the volume of passes that they play in a game, which if it's a kind of an index to like how much control do you have of the ball and how much can you do with the ball, you know, had to try and impose your game in any given 90 minutes. So they're averaging 542 passes per game. So Potter, it was 431. So this is like a 25% increase, a more than 25% increase, you know, that he's brought about. But that is, so if you look at games where they really dominate, like say with Potter, they had 500 or more passes 10 times last season in the league, 10 out of 38 matches, and 600 or more passes on one occasion. So with De Zerbi, that's, I think it's the last 12 matches in a row they've had more than 500 passes. They've had, that's happened 18 times in 23 of his, in the 23 right, league so games.
Just every game, basically.
Nearly every game. Yeah. And then over 600 passes, 7 times, right? So they're really dominating to a degree that they, you know, in about a third of their matches. But also if you compare them to sort of top teams, I mean, we'll leave City out of it because they're just in a different, a different sort of
stratosphere
level to everybody else. And you know, so 542 passes per game under De Zerbi, 519 is Liverpool's equivalent number for this season. Arsenal, who are winning leading the league, is 491. Man United, 429. Man United actually less than Potter Brighton.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised by. When you look at how that's happened with Man United, it's actually that there have been a few games this season where they've just got where they've really been dominated.
Yeah.
So actually, their worst performance in this aspect was when they beat Liverpool at Old Trafford early in the season. I think it was 197 that day. Like they barely, you know, they won the game. Was it 2-1, 3-1? I can't remember the exact score.
2-1, I think.
2-1. But they didn't. They really barely had the ball. And so there's a few games like that which bring the average right down. I guess I haven't seen the figures for yesterday's game, but I know that they got dominated. Anyway, the point is, Man United have won the game. the prize is to play against Manchester City. You know, is it a good prize? They get the chance to, you know.
Yeah, I'd say Man United's pass total will be closer to 197 than it will be to 419.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to win the match.
I would say that having it closer to 419 would probably lessen their chances.
But I do think that Guardiola will actually be happy to play them rather than
Brighton.
Yeah,
with Evan Ferguson as well.
Well, if Evan Ferguson is fit, I mean, so he should be fine. But I mean, it's assuming he doesn't get hurt again. So
that's our cup final.
Anyway, obviously Man City won pretty easily. Hat-trick by Mahrez.
Vast swathes of Wembley empty.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you see City fans, because this always happens now, you know. It's like, well, they played at Wembley, is it 19 times in 10 years?
Yeah.
And people are posting like, oh, it costs this much for like petrol, this much for, you know, which is true. I mean, it's a lot like... It's a lot, but it's because it's the same group of people. It's because, you know, you don't fill a stadium in London necessarily with Man City fans. Maybe in 10 years, if things keep going this way, then you'll start to see a kind of
a new generation,
a reserve group of fans. It's like, oh, I can get a ticket for the game, great, you know, as opposed to the sort of the same long suffering people. But so are we okay? The Tottenham, yeah, I mean.
It's the history of the Tottenham.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean...
well...
It's really... I mean, that was history-making, though, yesterday.
It was, because, I mean, I was watching it... I was watching the game live, and I've watched the first 20 minutes of it twice since, because I was like, this is, like, historic. What happened here? Like, what happened? Apparently, it's the first time Spurs have ever been 3-0 down inside 9 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was not the first time anyone had been 5-0 up after 21 minutes or 22 minutes. Man City had done this against Watford in 2019, 5-0 after 19 minutes.
Yeah.
So, okay. But it was still, I think it was the sixth time that someone had been 3-0 up inside 10 minutes in the history of the Premier League.
Yeah.
But this was between two teams that started the day with the... Not with the same number of points, but if Tottenham had won the game, they would have gone ahead of Newcastle.
Yeah.
They're now 6 points behind them, but if they'd won the game, they would have gone ahead of them, I think, on goal difference. But I suppose this isn't necessarily the... Tottenham lost 5-1 at Newcastle, if you remember, in the 2016 season, when they were actually very good under Pochettino. They just kind of... They just kind of quit in this last game. But that was a bit different, where there was a few goals run in the last quarter of the game. Like it was, you know, it was three of the five were after the 70th minute. But like this, to be down by that number of goals that early in the game, it's just so like, what do we even do now? Like, we've got to be here for at least another hour. And it's already like how bad can this get?
So, yeah, because at 5-0 down after 22 minutes, I mean, there's literally nothing. You do actually have to play out the game here. You know what I mean? You can't just say, "Well, Newcastle will probably ease off here." I mean, there's no guarantee that Newcastle ease off. You know, there was every chance that could have been 9-0.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, I mean, I suppose they changed it a little bit, because what Tottenham did to start this game was Christian Stellini, who is for some reason their manager, and this was the weekend when Paratici, their director of football, finally had to resign, accepting that his ban was upheld.
Worldwide ban.
Juventus's points were given back for now, but Paratici, his ban was upheld. Mm. Now I guess in the sort of technical sense, it would have been awkward for Tottenham to sort of sack him or demand his resignation before his appeal was heard. Mm. You know, there's always that sort of thing. But at the same time, it does create this overriding impression of paralysis. Well, our top guy, the guy who's supposed to be a top football decision maker, is suspended, for corruption. And you know, we've got a manager who's the assistant of the previous manager who left or was sacked or obviously wanted to leave. Why is he still there? I mean, I don't understand that. I guess if you want to understand it, apparently it has to do with saving money on the, if you sack them, you have to pay them up. But if you have them there, I suppose you have to pay them. But I think they should have looked at it as you also have to have them managing the team, which is also a cost. You know what I mean? That's another cost that Spurs are deciding to take on to avoid this early payout. So Christian Stellini decided, I'm assuming that he's aware of some of the conversation that happens around Tottenham. And one of the things had been, why do we play this wing back system? It's so limiting. It's stale. It's, you know, everyone knows what we're going to do. We can't score. You know, we're struggling. We're not really defending. Why don't we play four at the back? And it's, you know, better, you know. This has been a sort of a thing. Now, Conte didn't want to do this. Conte's was like, well, we don't have the players to do that. And people are like, well, you know, we've got Emerson Royale and we've got, you know, Romero and we had, they had at that time, I remember, Rodrigo Bentancur, who's been injured, and that's been a really, it's been a terrible injury for Tottenham to have to deal with, because he's a very important player, as you could see certainly in that game yesterday. But he decides, okay, all right, I'm going to do it. Let's do it. This is when Spurs achieve liftoff, Champions League liftoff. We're going to go to Newcastle. They're never going to be expecting this. I'm going to switch to a back four. I'm going to play 4-3-3. And we're going to Tottenham these guys. We're going to glory all over Newcastle United. The back four that he picks has got Pedro Porra at the right back. He's basically a winger. And they kind of turned him into a wing back. And now he's a full back. Perisic on the other side is the same. He's a winger. Can play wing back, is going to play full back. And then in the middle, you've got two centre halves who, let's be fair, let's be generous and say, are more comfortable in a three. Mm. Being less generous is because they're both really slow. Just too slow play. I mean, Dyer particularly, but Romero is not, you know. So you've got two very slow centre backs and two kind of novice fullbacks, and you go into Newcastle, who are hyped up. They've had a terrible result against Villa recently. You know, they need to get back on the horse. It seemed to me the wrong moment to pull out. They hadn't played this way for more than a year, since January last year. So, but what happened from that point on? I mean, you can say, well, you know, this, it's not like 4-3-3 is some like arcane system that, like, how could the players be expected to deal with the informational overload of having to play 4-3-3? But what really made the difference, I think, was just they just couldn't win anything. Like, every single ball that was in any way marginal in midfield was bouncing in the air. There's a Newcastle player jumping to get there first. You know, ball played in the midfield, there's a Newcastle player who's reacting quicker than the Spurs player to get there. And it just ends up, you know, Newcastle kind of coming at them again and again. So the first goal was an aimless header by Dier to Pop Sarr, who's playing in midfield. Midfield was Højbjerg, Skip and Sarr. And this was the worst. I mean, I've talked about the defence being kind of cobbled together. This was the worst performing part of the team. Sarr gives it away. There's then a terrible effort to defend. The ball comes across to Joe Linton, who just sort of starts dribbling. And then it's like, no one's challenging me here. Like, Romero sort of weirdly shows him inside onto his right foot. Like, Romero kind of adopts this strange stance.
Yeah, and can't move his legs and he's with the player trying to get
You know what he's defending, like, and then not for the only time in the game, but it seemed as though he's kind of thinking, there's two guys behind me. You know what I mean? I've got an extra player. I've got an extra
man. Show him into my reinforcements, and there is no one there.
If I can only see one teammate to my right, like the right back, Porro, then that means there are two. So, you know, as though he was still thinking in that way. So Joe Linton just sort of potters along the edge of the box, and by this time almost the entire Newcastle team has been able to flood into the box because he's been on the ball for so long without it. And then he just has a shot. Lloris palms it, and it's a goal by Murphy, and that's like, oh no, you know, here we are, we're 2 minutes in or 3 minutes, and we were already losing this huge game. Oh, this wasn't the start we wanted. The second goal, Newcastle sort of tried to attack down the right, and Spurs blocked that off. So it goes back to, I think, Cher just, with Spurs sort of pushing across, we're going to press the ball. Cher just kicks the ball over, Tottenham pushing across, did I say Newcastle? Just kicks the ball over Tottenham's entire team to Joe Linton, who Porro just hasn't been paying any attention to. Joe Linton is in, he scores.
Porro was playing as if he was playing the role of the middle centre half in a back three instead of being the right back.
Well, I mean, I suppose, you know, there's always going to be a trade-off between sort of pressure on the ball and, I mean, there was a similar, not exactly similar, but something a bit like it happens in the Liverpool-Southampton game when Southampton's goal, Nico Williams scored. Again, because Liverpool had pushed all the way over to one side, such that Andy Robertson, who was kind of in the Porro role, he was almost like right of the D, you know, he was that far across, and there was nobody there to cover. Nico Williams scored the goal. But, you know, this is something that happens sometimes. If you can spot it, you should still, you've got enough time to react to the ball, surely, that travels that far. You know, and it's something that you should be aware might happen. I thought Joe Linton did really well. I mean, I'm focusing on Tottenham here, but like, Newcastle played brilliantly. And Joe Linton, everything he did was like the timing of the run and then the control and around the goalkeeper was brilliant. So that's we're now 2-0 down. It's already turning into a kind of a joke performance. And now what they're thinking is, oh, we've got to try and we've got to settle. This has got to be. And what they do is they just start playing it backwards. Like, the third goal was Kulusevski dribbling backwards. You know, I'm going to dribble backwards now. I'm going to play a safe ball to Sarr. Sarr again is like, I don't know what to do. I know. I'll just turn sideways and pass the book here to Højbjerg. And Højbjerg is like, well, I'm not really sure what to do in this situation. But the main thing to do is not to give it away. So I'll just turn around and give it to Eric Dier, who's standing behind me and there's no one near him. So every time these backwards or sideways passes are played, Newcastle are pushing further and further up. And so it comes to Dier, and Dier can maybe go to Perisic, but there's someone maybe blocking that. So he decides, well, the best thing I can do is now just get the ball as far away from my goal and plays it forward to Son, who, if you look at Son before the ball's played, he's never expecting this pass. Mm. And just before the ball is played, he kind of gets a sense, I think he might be about to pass this to me, so starts to react. But by that time, it's already, maybe it's Bruno, I'm not sure which Newcastle midfielder, is reacting quicker. This is what they were doing this the whole time. Dyer plays the ball in midfield. Newcastle get it, goes to Murphy, and Murphy just turns and smashes it in. Lloris doesn't react at all. Mm. Lloris is off at half time. Apparently, he's got a muscle injury,
hip injury. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, something in there.
Yeah. He wasn't sure. He says we have to look at it today. It might be better for the next game.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was an amazing shot by Murphy. Murphy then produces this meme face, an instant meme face. Quite pleased with his third goal of the season.
I'm going to say a little surprised as well.
Ah.
There's an element of surprise in there for my namesake.
I think he hit it the way he wanted to hit it, you know? It was like unbelievable strike.
I think maybe the surprise came maybe towards the end of the journey of the shot, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, it was great. And at that point, you then had the scene of Cellini, who's kind of looking a bit embattled on the sideline, and Ryan Mason, who's like, is he the brains of the operation? I mean, Mason has obviously been at... Mason is, you know, the Tottenham deep state.
Yeah.
He's like the cabinet secretary of Tottenham. He's there.
Permanent government.
Yeah, managers come and go. Sir Humphrey Race, Ryan Mason is always there. And Mason is like whispering in the ear with his hands, talking to the ear of Cellini with his hands over his mouth. Cellini is like a sea captain, you know, in storm-tossed seas, looking out on the at the pitch. Mason,
and you're sure it was an iceberg?
Mason's standing behind him, talking, boss,
it was an iceberg, yeah.
We need to do something, you know, to react, and whatever it was he's saying, and Cellini's like, yeah. And then Mason finishes whatever he's saying and walks off, and Cellini continues to gaze out at the cruel seas of St. James's Park. And then he suddenly turns around to say something more to Mason, but notices he's not there. And then rather than call Mason over to say whatever it was he'd say, he just sort of, I'll just leave that. And which I thought was, I don't know what you wanted to say to him, but obviously it wasn't that important. But so then it's like, okay, we've got to, what are we going to do? Tottenham. Harry Kane actually could have scored at 12 minutes. Mm. And this is one of those moments where it's like, how big a beating is this? Obviously, it's a massive beating. It's like a historic beating. But, like, is it one of those things where there's not really that much difference between the teams? Like, if it's a question of a couple of things. Like, say Lloris reacts and isn't able to save the shot. Or say the first one he palms away doesn't go straight to Murphy. You know, it could be 1-1 at this point. You know, Kane scores. And
that's a bit of a reach, let's be honest.
Yeah. But is it that big a difference? You know, are Tottenham gonna do anything? The answer is no. Again, what happens is, and this player ended up getting substituted off, Sarr. Again, you know, he's not, whether he's just short-circuiting in the game or he's just not really cut out for this. Mm. I don't know what it was, but again, he gets the ball. He's got a little bit of time. He can play a ball out to the right. I guess it's Porro. He doesn't want to play it. He thinks maybe it's too risky. What if I give it away there? We're in trouble. So again, he turns around and passes the book to Højbjerg. He's like, here, you deal with this. Mm. And Højbjerg is like, what am I supposed to do with it? Remembering what happened to him the last time he was in this situation, remember he passed it back. He decides, okay, this time I'm not going to make the mistake of passing it back to Dyer. And so he just lashes a kind of a crossfield diagonal ball in the vague direction of Kulusevski. Kulusevski now has to go for this ball with Dan Byrne. Right, if you've seen Dan Byrne, he's a big lad.
A big lad.
If there's one situation Dan Byrne, I think, is going to be happy with, it's like, here's
get the diag launched. There's a big diag coming to me. Bird,
here's Kulusevski. And Kulusevski actually does, like, almost gets the ball. Mm. He tussles, he almost gets it, doesn't get it. Byrne manages to give it to Bruno Guimaraes. I think it's Son who's kind of closing him down a little bit. But he takes a great touch and then passes it really quickly to Joe Willock. Son is again now the closest player to Willock, who's the midfielder, if you remember, the Tottenham midfielder over the other side of the pitch. And Willock then produces this amazing ball. Like, just a beautiful, it's like, I can do anything. Joe Wilk,
it was
like,
an exceptional pass.
He's in an I can do anything mode. Why don't I just try and hit this first time the outside of my foot around Dyer? We know that Dyer's, you know, if I get past him and around him, he's not going to be a factor here. Or was it actually Robert? Was it Romero who was one of their two slow centre backs? And again, Isak then finishes it brilliantly. If you look at how quickly he does it, like, he couldn't have done it any more quickly. Like, to control, touch, and then shoot. Everything was perfect. So it's 4-0, and you're like, and then the fifth goal, they were showing the Newcastle supporters celebrating and basically cut to the game, and you just saw Isak running in and scoring. And I thought, well, this is nonsense. I mean, we've had too many crowd shots for colour here, and we actually don't know what's happened.
This happens in GAA games, but then there's usually about 50 scores in hurling games or whatever, you know?
All I'm saying is, I'm sure the footage exists, but I've watched this. I watched it back. I rewound it. They don't. They never at any point showed the kickoff. Like, what I was interested in is, how do Spurs give it away this time? It seems like someone fouled someone just inside the Newcastle half. Newcastle got a free kick, and that's when they cut to show exultant scenes. Yeah. You know, there was. There was an old woman running around with a black and white flag. I don't know, I'm not sure what point in the game that was, but she was like running. There's a famous scene of supporters doing that at Mexico 86.
Yeah.
It was the same thing, except with this like 70-year-old woman being cheered on by the whole crowd.
And why wouldn't she, sure?
But then, so again, I don't know who gave it away this time. I mean, obviously, it happened almost immediately. Then Newcastle just came down. And this is like the funniest one almost. Funniest is not the... is not the right word, but just to see, I've never seen a team play as badly for 10 seconds as Tottenham at this moment, because every player is just seems to be almost spinning on the spot, like, what is going on? Like, I don't know where to go, I don't know what to do. They're just not getting anywhere close to Newcastle, just sort of passing the ball to each other. Spurs players are like, oh, should I go this way, sort of turning the wrong way. No one's getting close to anybody. Ball in, then Isak, and then just scores again. Isak again, you know, like, Lloris, was there really nothing? Again, well, what's the point in even complaining at this point about Lloris? But, so it's 5-0, and then you're like, well, this is like one of those, no one's going to forget about this for a long time. You know, this is like, and then, and again, I look at, all Tottenham fans are all, this is, you know, Conte was right about us. No, it's so grim.
Yeah.
But it's back over to Stellini and Mason, and now there's furious activity going on. And what I loved particularly was the one of the, I can't remember actually, was it whether it was Mason or another kind of member of staff who's got like an iPad and is furiously going through the instructions for the substitute, Davinson Sanchez, who himself was subbed on and subbed off in a recent game and was getting hammered for it, for a bad performance. And it's just like kind of furiously going through these instructions, like all of the... And, you know, Sanchez is just sort of standing there going, okay, I'll do what I can. And they took off Papsar. And at that point... Well, from that point on, they drew 1-0.
Certainly one way of looking at it.
They drew the game 1-0. Harry Kane scored. And okay, finished the 6-1 with Harry Kane scoring.
You listen, if you'd offered Stellini 6-1 after 23 minutes, he'd have taken your hand off.
Well, he would have.
He would have.
And that was what they did. I mean, in answer to the question, what do you even do?
Yeah.
The answer is, try to play at the game without conceding another five goals.
Yeah.
And that's literally what they did. They went back to their three at the back, took off Sarr, put on Sanchez, tried to contain and Newcastle. There, I was looking at Newcastle, thinking, why are you not taking off Bruno Guimarães? He's like obviously injured. Remember, Bruno had an ankle injury earlier in the season. It looked like, oh, maybe he's going to miss the League Cup final because of this. You know, and he got back.
Yeah.
But I think he's been struggling a little bit with that. Whenever I see him, he always seems to have... There's always a moment in the game where he's like, oh, yeah, my ugly, ah. And, you know, in this game, he was visibly hobbling at times, I thought. I mean, he still played really well. I think he's definitely... Maybe he's Newcastle's best player. I mean, there's a few players. I think Isak is really coming, showing how good he's got the potential to be, you know, if he can stay fit. Botman obviously been really good all season. We've talked endlessly about Pope You know, even the, you know, Joe Linton has been great, but Bruno has been real such quality. Think, you got, why don't you protect this guy? And yeah. Eddie Howe's just standing there, like, if he dies, he dies. You know, he's just like, you know, we're going to need sacrifice.
And I'll tell you, it's like every single time I've looked at the Premier League table, Tottenham have been fifth, and they're still fifth.
I have no idea how it's happening.
Unbelievable! I've never experienced anything like it in my life. It's like Tottenham immovable. Win, fifth. Tottenham lose, still fifth.
It's true. I think it might be about to change.
I feel like Aston Villa's relentless physicality is going to take care of business.
Yeah, I think that could be a problem. But it is amazing the mess that they've made of it, and they've been in such a good position as well. If you think about when Conte left. It was the international break, right? So since then, they've played four league games: Everton, Brighton, Bournemouth, Newcastle. They actually won the most difficult one of those against, we've mentioned, Brighton. They drew with Everton. They lost to Bournemouth 3-2, and they've lost, obviously, 6-1 to Newcastle. You know, with different results in these games, they're probably going to get Champions League football. What I mean is, Conte left. It wasn't a typical situation where managers left because everything has kind of collapsed and they're screwed. Yeah. And it's just like, get Ryan Mason in, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Give it Ryan Mason till end season. They actually were in a position where they
had something to play for. Like,
yeah, they really did. They really did. And they didn't do anything. Is it because Fabio Paratici is the only person who can make a football decision? Is it because old Levy doesn't want to be associated with any, doesn't want to have his fingerprints on the next disastrous appointment? Whatever the reason, they didn't make a decision. This is a non-decision to have Stellini still there. They've wasted now the rest of the season. Like, they've wasted a great chance. They've cost themselves a fortune, right? By not making that. The odds were maybe against them anyway, but like, they were in a chance. They had a chance, and now I don't think they have a chance anymore. And it's just been such a run of mistakes, really, by their chairman. I don't know when, I don't know how far back even you want to go. Like, it seems increasingly to me that he's made like one. If you disregard the fact that Tottenham now have like maybe the best club stadium in the world, right, which is a significant achievement, no doubt, that's a kind of a big development in the history of the Tottenham.
Yeah.
And you have to credit Levy, although Levy will get paid for that. You know, he already has, and it's increasing the capital value of the club. Whenever Tottenham ultimately is sold, Levy will be a very rich man. So, you know, he didn't just do it selflessly to build Tottenham up. But I kind of feel as though appointing Riccio Pochettino was like the luckiest accident that they've had. Two really lucky accidents, actually. One of them is that Tim Sherwood put Harry Kane in the team.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why necessarily, just because he was like, you know, he's one of our own.
Yeah.
But like, it wasn't immediately obvious that Harry Kane was going to like be the best striker in the Premier League for the next few seasons, you know. But he put him in, gave him a chance. So by the time Pochettino came along, it was like, this guy Kane is actually going to be, we think he's going to be really good. And he kind of was in that team from the start, and they obviously had a few great years. But I don't feel as though Levy appointed Pochettino because he saw something in what Pochettino was doing that made him think this guy could be brilliant for Tottenham. I think he just appointed him because it was like, who's the manager in the Premier League who's doing best over the last season who might join Tottenham? And that was the process. That was the thought process.
Maybe that's being a little unfair.
No, it's not being unfair, because look what he does after that. He goes from Pochettino to Jose Mourinho. And I think he just hired Jose Mourinho because he's like, oh wow, Mourinho's out of a job. That means he might work for Tottenham. You know, there's no similarity between Pochettino and Mourinho.
Yes.
In terms of their ethos or what they're going to do. So if Pochettino had been like a thought through decision rather than just who can I get who's good at the moment, then you would have expected someone a bit more like him to follow him. But it was Jose, something totally different. And then when Jose's gone, it's Nuno Espirito Santo for like a 5 minutes until he decides, oh, there's someone more famous is available, Conte. And then Conte, I mean, again, we don't have time to go into that, what happened there. I think it's surprising how badly it went, you know? But now it's like, where are the ideas? Like, what are they going to do? Like, I mean, if Tottenham were to hire a manager now, which they obviously have to do, who should it be? I mean, by the Pochettino logic, what he will do now is go and beg Roberto De Zerbi to take the job.
Thank you, football.
Because that guy,
De Zerbi is like the like where Pochettino was when he was the Southampton manager. You know, he's kind of in that zone.
Yeah,
yeah, but I don't think De Zerbi's going to be interested in that job. Mm. You know, I just feel as though he might think, well, just the way things have gone there.
Yeah.
So as to what they're going to do, I really don't know. It reminded me a lot of the Stoke Liverpool. Remember the Steven Gerrard's last game for Liverpool. It was a similar pattern, a 6-1 away defeat. It was 5-0 at half time. Gerrard scored as Kane scored the kind of not consolation goal, the joke goal that actually almost made it worse.
Yeah.
And so is he in that? You know, Gerrard obviously left Liverpool then, and Liverpool, surprising everybody, regenerated quite quickly. They managed to hire a good manager the following season, Jurgen Klopp, which means, you know, there's always space for Tottenham to bounce back a little bit here. But as to what Harry Kane's got to do, I think if I was him, I'd be tempted to say, I'm staying, I'm not leaving. I can't walk away after something like this. I don't know what he's going to do, but it's a tough situation.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
We've got that bit better quality. We've just got to make it count. It might be a knob end.
Is it too much to ask?
In 91st minute. That wins it.
So basically, like, any chance you train? I think Roy said something under his breath about Johnny or something.
You're always on the team until never fuck.
Roy is Roy, isn't he? I'm sure there's lessons to be learned by everybody.
And Harry was just going, Roy, I'm not speaking to you like this, like, you know, I'm not listening to you.
When I got the sack at Sheffield United, the only guy that spoke to me was Roy Keane. I'll never forget that. And I thought that was a bit of class.
We've got that bit better quality, and we've just got to make it count.
He called me a.
It might be a knob end in 91st minute that wins it.
Tweet here before you finish from Marcus O'Callaghan. Is Theo Walcott the first player to do a non-celebration against his former team, only to then go back to the former team and do a non-celebration for them against a team he had previously scored against him for? Layers upon layers at second captains.
Did he? Oh, he didn't celebrate scoring at Southampton for Arsenal, and then he didn't celebrate scoring against Arsenal.
Unbelievable.
Well, it was a bit.
We're all playing checkers. That man's playing chess.
It was a bit. Oh, now you do it, Theo.
Yeah.
Finally, you turned up in a title decider.
Full on, like real hatred there. That's pretty much it, Ken. I want to thank you most dearly for your efforts today. It's been truly an honour to see your work up close. You inspire me every day with your work ethic and your constant good humour around the office. Gormagath, as the quid jibber in you.
Gormagath, thank you.
Thank you very much for listening. Owen will be back in the hot seat on the World Service tomorrow. And don't forget, the Second Captain's podcast is part of the Simon, give it to me from the back.
Acast.
Creator Network. The Acast Creator Network. Correct.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.